Her lips were red, her looks were free. Her locks were yellow as gold, her skin was white as leprosy. The nightmare, life and death was she, who thicks man's blood with cold. Samuel Taylor Coleridge described the personification of death thusly in his epic poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. It is an artful concept that death, the force with which life has ended, could be personified at times as a woman, at times as a man. In religion, the image varies, some as a great and powerful demon beast, as in the Talmud, or personified as angels, such as Michael or Azrael. Comics create the image that death is a woman, beautiful and stoic, although secretly a skeleton shrouded in a black cloth of night. There are those who are eternal, who pursue her romantically, those who are limited, who fear her, respect her. This is just another example of man's obsession with death. He spends the entirety of his life in the pursuit of creation and collection, to attain things, to build a kingdom, an empire around himself, to create progeny, or to inspire people to recall him when he is gone. Others believe that death is not the end, but the beginning, simply a transition between this plane and the next. Or in Buddhism, where death is merely just one more spoke of the eternal wheel of nirvana. Whichever you prefer, I would suggest you be cautious of that pale figure stalking at the corner of your gaze. Make sure your affairs are in order, and that you tell those you care the most about how much you love them every single day. These are dark times, and these stories come from very dark places. Good evening, listeners. This is Jonas Armitage, and you're listening to Stories from Dark Places. On tonight's show, we shall be listening to a story by Julius Long in his recount of the mysterious visitor in room 212. I don't know about the rest of you, but I've never been very fond of hotels. Well, it is certainly convenient that there is an establishment that you can find to stay when you are away from your most familiar places. I've never been good at sleeping in them. The sense of alien surroundings, the unknowingness of the surrounding environment, the strangers, and the immersion of new and unknown things has always left me incapable of resting. Do you find yourself comfortable when you sleep in strange places? Do you ever wake in the middle of the night, feeling eyes on you, wondering if that mirror across the room is a true mirror, if someone's watching you through it? I certainly hope I'm not the only one, otherwise I'm going to have to talk to a doctor about some medications, I think. Anyway, moving along from that, I'll bring you Julius Long's story, The Pale Man, in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Are you itching for a good story? Laughter among friends, maybe even a mystery or two? Well, you're in luck. Fire-Breathing Kittens is a standalone Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Each episode is a separate 3-hour-long story, like a movie for your ears, so you can listen to these adventures in any order you like. So, join us on a real-play D&D quest as we solve mysteries, attempt comedic banter, and enjoy friendship. Fire-Breathing Kittens podcast. Fantasy, action, mystery, friendship.
I have not yet met the man in number 212. I do not even know his name. He never patronizes the hotel restaurant, and he does not use the lobby. On the three occasions when we passed each other by, we did not speak, although we nodded in a semi-cordial, non-committal way. I should very much like to make his acquaintance. It is lonesome in this dreary place. With the exception of the aged lady down in the corridor, the only permanent guests are the man in number 212 and myself. However, I should not complain, for this utter quiet is precisely what the doctor prescribed. I wonder if the man in 202, too, has come here for a rest. He is so very pale. Well, yet I cannot believe that he is ill, for his paleness is not of a sickly cast, but rather wholesome in its ivory clarity. His carriage is that of a man enjoying the best of health. He is tall and straight, and he walks erect and with a brisk, athletic stride. His pallor is no doubt congenital, else he would quickly tan under this burning summer sun. He must have traveled here by auto, for he certainly was not a passenger on the train that brought me, and he checked in only a short time after my arrival. I had briefly rested in my room and was walking down the stairs when I encountered him ascending with his bag. It is odd that our venerable bellboy did not show him to his room. It is odd, too, that for so many vacant rooms in the hotel, he should have chosen number 212 at the extreme rear. The building is a long, narrow affair, 3 stories high. The rooms are all on the east side, as the west wall is flush with a decrepit business building. The corridor is long and drab, and its stiff, bloated paper exudes a musky, unpleasant odor. The feeble electric bulbs that light it shine dimly, as if from a tomb. Revolted by this corridor, I insisted vigorously upon being given number 201, which is at the front and blessed with southern exposure. The room clerk, a disagreeable fellow with a Hitler mustache, was very reluctant to let me have it, as it is ordinarily reserved for his more profitable transient trade. I fear my stubborn insistence has made him an enemy. If only I'd been as self-assertive 30 years ago, I should now be a full-fledged professor instead of a broken-down assistant. I still smart from the cavalier manner in which the president of the university summarily recommended my vacation. No doubt he acted for my best interests. The people who have dominated my poor life invariably have. Oh, well, the summer's rest will probably do me considerable good. It is pleasant to be away from the university. There is something positively gratifying about the absence of the graduate student face. If only it were not so lonely. I must devise a way of meeting the pale man in number 212. Perhaps the room clerk can arrange matters. I have been here exactly a week, and if there is a friendly soul in this miserable little town, he has escaped my notice. Although the tradespeople accept my money with a flattering eagerness, they studiously avoid even the most casual conversation. I'm afraid I can never cultivate their society unless I can arrange to have my ancestors recognized as local residents for the last 150 years. Despite the coolness of my reception, I have been frequently venturing abroad. In the back of my mind, I have cherished hopes that I might encounter the pale man in number 211. Incidentally, I wonder why he has moved from number 212. There is certainly a little advantage in coming only one room nearer to the front. I noticed the change yesterday when I saw him coming out of his new room. We nodded again, and this time I thought I detected a certain malign satisfaction in his somber black eyes. He must know that I'm eager to make his acquaintance, yet his manner forbids overtures. Well, if he wants to make me go all the way, he can go to the devil. I'm not the sort to run after anybody. Indeed, the surly diffidence of the room clerk has been enough to prevent me from questioning him about his mysterious guest. I wonder where the pale man takes his meals. I have been absenting myself from the hotel restaurant and patronizing the restaurants outside. At each, I've ventured inquiries about the man in number 210. No one at any restaurant remembered his having been there. Perhaps he has an entree into the Brahmin homes of this town. And again, he may have found a boarding house. I shall have to learn if there is one. Well, the pale man must be difficult to please, for he's again changed his room. I am baffled by his conduct. If he is so desirous of locating himself more conveniently in the hotel, why does he not move to number 202, which is the nearest available room to the front? Perhaps I can make his inability to locate himself permanently an excuse for starting a conversation. I see we are closer neighbors now, I might casually say, but that is too banal. I must await a better opportunity. He's done it again. He is now occupying number 209. I'm intrigued by his little game. I waste hours trying to fathom its point. What possible motive could he have? I should think he would get on the hotel people's nerves. I wonder what our combination bellhop chambermaid thinks of having to prepare 4 rooms for a single guest. If he were not stone deaf, I would ask him. At present, I feel too exhausted to attempt such an enervating conversation. I am tremendously interested in the pale man's next move. He must either skip a room or remain where he is, for a permanent guest, a very old lady, occupies number 208. She has not budged from her room since I've been here, and I imagine she does not intend to. I wonder what the pale man will do. I await his decision with the nervous excitement of a devotee of the track on the eve of a big race. After all, I have so little diversion. Well, the mysterious guest was not forced to remain where he was, nor did he have to skip a room. The lady in number 208 simplified matters by conveniently dying. No one knows the cause of her death, but it is generally attributed to old age. She was buried this morning. I was among the curious few who attended her funeral, and when I returned home from the mortuary, I was in time to see the pale man leaving her room. Already he's moved in. He favored me with a smile, whose meaning I have tried in vain to decipher. I cannot believe that he meant it to have some significance. He acted as if there were between us some secret that I failed to appreciate. But then perhaps his smile was meaningless after all, and only ambiguous by chance, like that of the Mona Lisa. My man of mystery now resides in number 207, and I am not the least surprised. I would have been astonished if he'd not made his scheduled move. I have almost given up trying to understand his eccentric conduct. I do not know a single thing more about him than I knew the day he arrived. I wonder whence he came. There's something indefinably foreign about his manner. I'm curious to hear his voice. I like to imagine that he speaks with exotic tongue of some faraway country. If only I could somehow inveigle him into conversation. I wish that I were possessed of the glib assurance of a college boy who can address himself to the most distinguished celebrity without batting an eye. It is no wonder that I am only an assistant professor. I'm worried. This morning I awoke to find myself lying prone upon the floor. I was fully clothed. I must have fallen exhausted there after I returned to my room last night. I wonder if my condition is more serious than I had expected. Until now, I've been inclined to discount the fears of those who have pulled a long face about me. For the first time, I recalled the prolonged hand clasp of the president when he bade me goodbye from the university. Obviously, he never expected to see me again alive. Of course, I'm not that unwell. Nevertheless, I must be more careful. Thank heaven I have no dependents to worry about. I have not even a wife, for I was never willing to exchange the loneliness of a bachelor for the loneliness of a husband. I can say in all sincerity that the prospect of death does not frighten me. Speculation about life beyond the grave has always bored me. Whatever it is or is not, I'll try to get along. I have been so preoccupied about the sudden turn of my own affairs that I have neglected to make note of a most extraordinary incident. The pale man has done an astounding thing. He skipped 3 rooms and moved all the way to number 203. We're now very close neighbors. We shall meet oftener, and my chances for making his acquaintance are now greater. I have confined myself to bed during the last few days and had my food brought to me. I even called the local doctor, who I suspect to be a quack. He looked me over with a professional indifference and told me not to leave my room. For some reason, he does not want me to climb stairs. For this bit of information, he received a $10 bill, which, as I directed him, he fished out of my coat pocket. A pickpocket couldn't have done it better. He had not been gone long when I was visited by the room clerk. That worthy suggested of a great show of kindly concern that I use the facilities of the local hospital. Oh, it was so modest and all that. With more firmness than I have been able to muster in a long time, I gave him to understand that I intended to remain where I am. Frowning sullenly, he stiffly retired. The doctor must have paused long enough downstairs to tell him a pretty story. It's obvious that he's afraid I shall die in his best room. pale man is up to his old tricks. Last night, when I tottered down the hall, the door of number 202 was slightly ajar. Without thinking, I looked inside, and the pale man sat in a rocking chair, idly smoking a cigarette. He looked up into my eyes and smiled that peculiar, ambiguous smile that has so deeply puzzled me. I moved on down the corridor, not so much mystified as annoyed. The whole mystery of the man's conduct is beginning to irk me. It's all so inane, so utterly lacking motive. I fear that I shall never meet the pale man, but at least I'm going to learn his identity. Tomorrow I shall ask for the room clerk and deliberately interrogate him. I know the identity of the pale man, and I know the meaning of his smile. Early this afternoon, I summoned the room clerk to my bedside. Please tell me, I asked abruptly, who is the man in number 202? The clerk stared weakly and uncomprehendingly. You must be mistaken. The room is unoccupied. Oh, but it is. I snapped. I saw myself the man there only two nights ago. He's a tall, handsome fellow with dark eyes and hair, unusually pale. He checked in the day that I arrived. The hotel man regarded me dubiously as if I were trying to impose upon him. But I assure you, there's no such person in the house. As for his checking in when you did, you were the only guest we registered that day. What? I've seen him here 20 times. First he had number 212 at the end of the corridor. Then he kept moving toward the front. Now he's next door in room 202. The room clerk threw up his hands. You're crazy, he exclaimed, and I saw that he meant what he said. I shut the door at once and dismissed him. After he had gone, I heard him rattling the knob of the pale man's door. Well, there's no doubt that he believes the room to be empty. Thus, it is that I now understand the events of the past few weeks. I now comprehend the significance of the death in number 207. I even feel partly responsible for the old lady's passing. After all, I brought the pale man with me. But it was not I who fixed his path. Why he chose to approach me room after room through the length of this dreary hotel. Why his path crossed the threshold of the woman at 207. Those mysteries I cannot explain. I suppose I should have guessed his identity when he skipped the three rooms the night I fell unconscious upon the floor. In a single night of triumph, he advanced until he was almost to my door. He'll be coming by and by to inhabit this room, his ultimate goal. And when he comes, I shall at least be able to return his smile of grim recognition. Meanwhile, I have only to wait beyond the bolted door.
A good story, wouldn't you say? I love when stories are broken up in formulaic styles like journal entries or recording sessions. I appreciate the organic sense of interruption. It makes it feel as if you are more accurately living in someone's memory of an event to come. The attachment seems just a little more immersive, I think. Although, I could be wrong. Who am I to pretend to be any sort of expert? Next week is Thanksgiving, and I hope you all have plans to go and spend time with your loved ones.
We're still sorting out how the studio will be affected by the approaching holidays. So we shall keep you informed as to whether or not our production schedule will have any interruptions. But as it stands, I think we shall be with you into the cold nights of November, December, and beyond. Anyway, that's all the time we have tonight. Join us next week, hopefully, for stories to entertain, to inspire. Until then, good night, listeners. And please remember, should you find yourself awoken in the middle of the night, grasped by a sense that there is something there, that you're not alone, remember, there's nothing to be afraid of. After all, some of the best things only happen in the dark.
Stories from Dark Places was recorded before an imaginary studio audience. All stories performed on this podcast have express written consent from the original author. Jonas Armitage, his studio manager, and the entire staff of WZHB Radio Innsmouth are fictitious characters. It is probably for the best that you continue to believe that.
Do your friends and family members keep departing the mortal coil into the sweet release of death and the glorious unknowableness that is Dagon and the Elder Gods? Are you busy with work and home life and just can't find the time to handle their affairs? Then call Bob's Coffins and Plots. Bob Shipley has been a member of the Innsmouth community for over 60 years, and he believes that things like death and funerals are best left to the experts, and no one in Innsmouth knows more about death than Bob. Bob's Coffins and Plots. Let Bob handle your dead loved ones.